open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Good afternoon to you. It's 12:15, sort of a overcast day here in town. We're not going to let that dampen our spirits. However, it's time for another agenda. So draw near to your radio and consider this. Who are you going to call when the wolf, euphemistically speaking, is at the door? Who are you going to call when it's not a ghost, but a confused human that's haunting your backyard? Who are you going to call when someone sideswipes your car in the dead of night? To whom exactly will you reach out? Your brother-in-law? Your mom's new boyfriend? The guy next door with a bad back? That fella you went to traffic school with, but you can never remember his name? You always just call him Buddy? Well, I wouldn't call him. No, I wouldn't call him if a sheriff's deputy was available. I trust neither would you. Well, not to book a deputy, which I'd never do. We went right to the top, and I'm pleased to say our very special guest is the sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett, or you can raise all those subjects with. Forget the guy with a bad back. He wasn't going to help you anyway. Sheriff, welcome back to KPQ. It's good to have you here.
Thanks, Michael.
So I did find the introduction after all. I'll be damned. I couldn't find that anywhere. Well, when I said that we would start at the beginning, do you mind saying you went to school here, right?
I went to school in Leavenworth.
Went to school in Leavenworth. Yeah. When did it cross your mind? I don't think we've ever discussed this, why you wanted to be a deputy, a cop, a
it
man.
It was not when I was in high school, I can tell you that much.
But it never crossed your mind?
No, really when it started to, you know, I was working in the timber industry pretty soon out of high school. Ended up working for my father-in-law's business. And we ended up moving out of state for some contracts that they had in Northern California. I worked a little bit in Oregon. He was working on his own private timber, and we did select logging, which means thinning and making firewise and that type of thing. Even back then, back in the late 80s and 90s, yeah, that was they had some really good stuff going on as far as how to forest management. But anyway, and then you know it just got I was married, had a young family. And I started thinking of what my work schedule looked like. I liked what I did, but it was a lot of hours and it was hard work. And I just started looking at the future. It's like, man, am I going to be able to coach Little League? Am I going to be able to go to my kids' games and stuff like this? Or is it just going to be work, 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 work? And so I started just, you know, kind of soul searching on what I was interested in. The only thing that kept coming back was law enforcement. And I really couldn't tell you, like, there was a defining moment of saying, you know, I had this conversation with so-and-so or this. It really wasn't that. I just really felt like it was kind of a God-led thing and I was interested in. And then, when I was still, working in the timber industry in Northeast Oregon, I got involved with a department in Wallowa County and did a little bit of, they didn't really have a reserve academy, but I, you know, signed up to be a reserve officer, did a little work in their jail, did some ride-alongs. And that's when I decided, yeah, I think this is the direction I want to go.
You thought you had a gift for it.
Well, I don't know if I had a gift for it, but it was certainly what I was interested in. I didn't have a college education at the time, and my dad passed away in 1996, and about that time we were going to relocate back here to Washington and so I could pursue my profession in law enforcement. I ended up working one more year here in the timber industry for a local logging company, running equipment for them. And then again, I just started out and started going and taking tests. Now, taking tests back then was quite a bit different, Michael, than it is now. Most of the agencies use our public safety testing, which you go online, fill out, you know, background information, a personal history statement, and then you'll sign up and you'll go take a written and physical and you'll get your scores and you actually put on your test distribution list on what agencies you're interested in working for. And they'll distribute those lists all across Washington State. And you can get a lot of different agencies. But back in the day, you would actually contact that individual agency.
See, I want to take your test.
Pay a filing fee, an application fee, and then go down and, you know, fill out all the paperwork. And then you would show up and do a written and a physical. And that one only counted for that agency. So it was a lot of work and driving around the state and different things to try to get in.
So we standardized it.
So, yeah. So I ended up testing and going to work here for the Chelan County Regional Jail at the time. And that was under the umbrella of the sheriff's office at the time. And, again, now it's run by our county commissioners. And then I worked there just under 2 years and transferred down as a field deputy, again, testing separately, individually. And then, you know, I would say the rest is history, but, you know, I've always loved what I did. And I can remember getting ready to go to work in the early years my career in patrol, and I was working a swing shift, either 3 to 11, 4 to midnight. We worked 5/8 back then. And my wife was just like, would you just go to work? You know, you're in it. But the reason I say that is because I really enjoyed it. I was excited about going to
work. You already had your face
yeah.
off.
Yeah. Don't know so much that it's that exciting now, you know, but again, you know, I'm passionate about what I do and what it is to really have, what we call servant leadership within our law enforcement, good training and different things like that. And then again, recruiting and retaining the right type of people to lead this agency in the future.
The kids who went to school with you in Leavenworth, did they say, we saw that in you years ago. We knew you were going to be a cop.
No, I don't know. I mean, maybe they say I seen some leadership qualities in you, but then again, leadership is, boy, it's in every aspect of everything we do. You can be a leadership in any, you know, a leader in anything. So I think it's important to say, you know, look at your audience because you are a leader to someone and making sure that we actually make a difference. It was interesting though, again, I graduated from Cascade High School and moved away and was out of the area for almost 10 years, came back with a family. You know, and I did some things in high school that I'm not proud of, you know.
We all did.
You know, at the same time, but I came back and I served my community that I grew up in. So I had a lot of connections people that are familiar with. But, you know, I've been told by people in the past, say, oh, don't give me that. You know, I know what you used to do in high school, meaning that, you know, we were underage drinkers or maybe we had, you know, used marijuana illegally a few times. But, again, then I would just say, you know, that was many years ago. And the big piece of that is, do you mature? Because we know growing up is not an option. Growing up is not an option. We are going to grow older, but maturing
is
a decision that we make to do. And so where are you at in that process and where do you go with that in your decision and personal decision making?
Plus, if someone's going to pull you over for drinking or using marijuana, I would prefer that the cop at least know something about the subject. So he can adequately and accurately decide what's going on in somebody's car. These kids shouldn't be driving their car right now.
Absolutely. And I really became passionate about that. One of my best friends in high school, Michael, was killed in a DUI accident.
Oh, that's tough.
About 4 or 5 years out of high school. He was the causing driver. And, I can remember receiving that phone call from his older brother, it was heart-wrenching. And I remember him telling me he felt responsible because, you know, that was part of the way that we, you know, if we were going to be kids in high school and running around and doing some underage drinking at the time was that, you know, how are you getting that? Someone's providing that for you unless you're stealing it from someone. And I can just remember having that conversation later and how he just ultimately felt responsible because he had purchased, you know, alcohol for underage people in the past. And just felt like that he contributed to that. And it's like, no, your brother made a decision to get behind the wheel and drive, as do many, many young people.
Anybody else in the car?
You know, no. Ironically, he hit a vehicle head on. And it was another 17-year-old boy that had critical injuries, ended up surviving, but ended up being the son of a current employee that they worked together in the same business. And so, yeah, that's, you know, and I could go on for other stories. I know other kids and people that aren't alive today that I grew up with, you know, and graduated with and different things like that. Saying again, decision making, which is a great thing. You know, we've had some staff step up, reach out to our local school districts and say, you know, at graduation time last year, we had a couple of serious accidents where one individual was killed on a motorcycle. And
boy, that's been a year.
We're coming up on that, Michael. And then we had some young kids that were ejected from the back of a vehicle. And what we're saying, you know, alcohol or not related, let's put some things in place to make sure that this doesn't happen to our young kids and families so they have a bright future and not something that's going to affect them in such a horrible way. And so we're just reaching out to them and saying to do some things, to put some things in place and partner with our school districts to say, let's make an awareness of this while it's still fresh, because it's easy for people to forget, and then the younger kids coming up or don't realize that and decision making and such. So we want to be kind of navigate alongside of them again so they can have a safe graduation.
I had a high school like yours. I did a lot of things that I shouldn't have, but our motto was never get caught. The things that we did, we didn't intend to go to jail for them, and it was considered very bad form to be stupid in the street and just get pulled over or taken away by a cop. That's what you deserve if that's the way you want to act.
Right.
But when it came time for me with my daughter, I knew growing up in Los Angeles that she was going to have a lot of temptations. So I said, I don't care what you do, but you're going to get in trouble sooner or later, and you're going to find yourself in a way that you don't want to go home with these people. Call me and just wake me up. No charge, no judgment, no nothing. I'll come and get you. I don't care where you are. You can be 30 miles away. And she did that twice, and I was really glad she did it.
Right.
And I had to take a car full of drunk kids home, but at least I was driving, and they weren't. And they had a wonderful time because I didn't say a word to them. I just said, get in the car, we're going.
And this is what a lot of people don't understand is they say, well, you know, we don't plan on going out and getting in the vehicle. We're going to do this in a safe location. But the problem is most people don't plan on doing that. Yeah. And then when the alcohol takes effect, there's a series of events that somewhere leads down the road that people get in a vehicle.
Yep.
And some bad things happen and people lose their lives and they're forever changed. And so those are the type of things we're saying, hey, let us navigate through this with you, to make sure that you can make it to adulthood. Without having some severe consequences. I mean, I graduated a man that I had a lot of respect for in my basic law enforcement academy class, later on in life, was arrested for vehicular homicide as a police officer. And so, you know, he lost his job, he lost his career for one, bad timing decision. And it doesn't make you a bad person. It means you made a bad decision, and so those are the type of things we want people to avoid and go without. And so, again, we enter into spring-type weather, to summer-type weather, recreation. Alcohol tends to flow more outside in vehicles, and I guess this is just a good reminder of, say, hey, let's be responsible. And there's a lot of different things that people can do. Is one, be of age. And two, if you're going to be in a vehicle, make sure that the person that's driving hasn't had anything to drink at all. I always say that's the safest way, because a lot of people ask you, or kids want to know, well, how much can I drink and still be, legal behind the wheel?
I'm just saying, how much?
I'm always saying, that the safest way is for if you're ever going to drink is never get behind the wheel, right, of a vehicle. Make sure that your sober driver is 100% sober, because then there can never be any questions there. Because, there's neg driving and there's just a lot of different things. And there's so many more distractions now, I believe, today's day and age, especially that teenage drivers face, and even adults, than we've ever had before.
Use your cameras to video your friend while they're drunk and show them to him later, and you'll see how much of a fool you are when you think you're totally in control and baffling the authorities with your explanations. In fact, I don't know how you guys handle it, because I can't stand sloppy drunks or tell me that they just had two drinks. But that's what everyone has. Am I right? How much did you drink? I had two.
Well, I did see a post the other day, and it said, in dog years, they've only had one beer. And that was the first time I heard that one, Michael. But obviously, yeah, it's the universal language is two beers. And I think they think that that's safe, thinking that most people believe that, I can have a couple drinks and be well under the limit. But really, it's not about what is the legal limit. It really is about... That is one piece of it, but it's about sobriety. Are you under the influence? And it's not just alcohol. Now we have legalized marijuana.
Every kind of mixture.
We have prescription pills, and then sometimes mixed with a drink,
sure,
alcohol, and the combination is a contributing factor. It can be a lot of different things. So a lot of those things is, again, be responsible, because people can get arrested and convicted of driving under the influence and even be in just prescription based medication.
That's our sheriff. He's the sheriff of Chelan County. Brian Burnett's our special guest today. We'll be back to talk about, whatever he wants right after this.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:33 at News Radio 560 KPQ. My very special guest is the sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett. Men do most of the work. Women do some of the work. The sheriff does some of the work. But everybody relies from time to time on their dogs, their canine units, and they're really effective. No man alive will ever turn and run from a dog for very long before he gives up.
Well, I wouldn't say no man, but I guess someone in their right mind may not choose to do that, Michael.
Well, he'll be put into his right mind soon enough.
A valuable resource and another tool in our toolbox is the way we look at it.
When did you get your first dog?
Boy, I'd have to go back that was way before my time.
Really?
Yeah.
We've had dogs all this time.
Yeah, we've had dogs on and off. I mean, we've had, our search and rescue dogs that back in the day when Sergeant Randy Foltz was here, was running that program. We had some bloodhounds, very effective. And as far as, you know, search and rescue, and even those dogs got used at sometimes for more of a, you know, trying to track down and apprehend someone that was wanted. But I believe under, you know, current laws and different training aspects that they try to avoid that. Again, just use those for search and rescue. We've had a bomb dog in the past, again, using those for different things to maybe locate explosives, firearms, and different things like that. And so primarily what our goal is right now is to maintain and move towards search and rescue again. That's been a tough program for us to maintain over the last few years. And then for our apprehension and tracking dogs to go after violent offenders.
Working dogs, I'm so impressed by their ability to turn it on and off faster than a human can, really. They're a dog 1 minute, and then they're a weapon of law enforcement the next. And then they're happy and be back to being a dog.
Really, yeah, and it's really about training and obedience. And that's a big piece of, you know, can they pass the training? Again, 400-plus hours for our apprehension dogs and the handler, and they have to be trained together. And so that's where a lot of our costs are. So when we look at average costs for purchasing, training, and equipping a canine handler and his canine at $20,000 to $25,000. And so a big piece of that is, one is, are we picking a good dog and matching them with a good handler? And a lot of times in our selection process, we actually have a board that comes together of people that have past experience with canine, which is not myself, and they look at all of those type of things during the interview and testing process to who's going to be chose for our next canine handler.
When the dog is available for purchase and for to begin the training process, do you get to pick between 20 dogs, or is there one that's said that this is the best one that you can get?
Generally, we've been working with vendors and some of our staff that works in our canine program. We went to Alaska to a vendor up there, and basically talking with them, part of the process has been, hey, we've got this dog we think that would be awesome for you. And then so we'll take somebody that's got that experience, go up and actually visit them and spend a few days with that dog and with the company to make sure that, yeah, we believe this is going to be a good purchase. Because it's not just about saying, hey, it's not like going in and buying a car. It's like all of a sudden you don't like the way this performs. It's not what you thought it was, right. And I can sell this and move on and trade and buy another one. Is you've invested, and it's going to take some time and turnaround to get that canine up and running and again. And then we're scheduling and timing to make sure that we're going to be able to get that dog and that handler into a class at a certain time, because there may not be another class coming up for months, if it may be in the next year. So again, then you're going to lose that on that time. And so as we try to forecast in the future the best we can, how do we maintain that program proficiently, and not knowing, you know, is a dog going to be injured and go out all of a sudden catastrophically, or through just aging, you know, as poor performance, or just physically they can't do what they need to do anymore. So, you know, a best case scenario is that dog is going to have a great, successful, long life. And then as we look at in the future saying, hey, we think we've got another year or two left with this canine. If everything goes well, then that's the time we have to start moving forward to plan for the next one. Otherwise, we're going to be down one position in our canine program.
You find you need the canines at night when tracking somebody might be more difficult?
Generally, that's where you're more of your, what we'll call your violent crimes or your violent offenders, that type of thing happens. I mean, we use them for, you know, stolen vehicle pursuits, and someone flees, crashes out the car, ditches the car, and that person goes to ground. And again, we've had several successful tracks here recently with a couple of our canines. And I remember the canine handler putting out a, hey, thank you, everybody. And the reason for being successful is because we were able to get there so quickly. And so we have, you know, they talk about, are they air scenting or ground scenting, contamination, cold weather, warm weather. There's a lot of different factors in there that, you know, your handlers are working with when we're looking at science-wise and what actually works for that dog and their tracking and their senses.
Do you ever put on the pads and have an attack? Have a dog grab you?
I've done some training with them years ago where we actually went and hid and put the sleeve on and right. Do some work. And I'm not as closely involved with that now, but I sure love to watch them perform. I go to into the schools occasionally with some of our canine handlers and their canines as we go and talk and show to the kids. The kids just love to see the
sure.
the animals come in and talk about what law enforcement does with these animals.
It's fascinating that these dogs have received this remarkable training, and sometimes in a different language, so that the handler has to learn Dutch or German or something, Czech, depending on where they, I don't know if the ones from Alaska are, give commands in English or not.
Right, and that's just so you bond and have a communication with the dog that not anybody else is going to be able to do,
yeah.
obviously. And again, hopefully that dog is really keyed in to their handler and that they perform as a team. And again, 100% obedience compliance is what they need to have to do that, and that's a liability issue. You know, if something happens, you need to call that dog off. You want them to be obedient. Now, when you give that command.
I never had a dog like that, but so, I would love to.
You know, here we are talking about apprehension dogs, but we haven't even talked about drug dogs, and we have one of those as well. You know, the day and age is changing. They don't quite get utilized exactly what they used to, and that has to do with some search and seizure laws and some things that we see changing in and around legislatively or within our 9th District courts. But at the same time, they still do use them. We use them a lot for the, you know, the drug task force, and for supplementing and I guess supporting search warrants as well. But obviously, with the legalization of marijuana, that really changed things as far as how we used to use them on traffic stops and different things like
that. So many dogs were trained just for marijuana, or predominantly in marijuana.
Right, or you trained them for marijuana and other illegal drugs, but now marijuana is legal.
Right.
So how does that work?
We don't know which one is signaling.
Right. So.
But there's fascinating ideas that these dogs have such extraordinary smellers, they can tell the difference between methamphetamine and flour.
Well, yeah, I think even you could, Michael, with some good training.
You know, a guy was in jail for 6 months in Las Vegas for selling heroin that turned out to be tied. So maybe not.
But he actually thought it was heroin.
That
was the reason, yeah. And it's just amazing the senses that the animals have and the ability that they have that we as humans don't possess. And
so when you watch your handler become more of a dog than a sheriff's deputy, that just goes with the game?
Well, no, and that's the thing is they still have to be able to function and do all of that other stuff. So they're really stepping up there and really stepping out and saying what they want to do. And it's going to be somewhat of an inconvenience in their lifestyle.
Because they take the dog home.
And I say that. Well, they take that dog home, and so they're responsible for them. They're also, you know, as far as when you look at somebody that says, I've got a vehicle that's going to have a smelly dog and dog hair all through that. I mean, a canine handler's vehicle is unlike anybody else's, even when they keep their car clean. It just is. It's like it's like a kennel on wheels, and those smells go with it. And sometimes dogs go to the bathroom when you're not wanting them to. And I'm sure if you interview any canine handler, they're going to have a lot of different stories on where that dog has dropped a load that they weren't really
wanting to have it.
And then again,
going
to clean that
pants.
Up. Yeah. Be ready and be prepared because it's going to happen.
Well, I had to learn something about the canine handlers because we had a visit here from them, from the guys, and they left their dog in the car, and it was summertime. I said, well, don't leave your car outside. Bring the dog in. He said, it's okay. He's got his own cooling unit. And it operates separately from the car. When the car's even turned off, the cooling unit works. So the dog's in there, cool as a cucumber, ready to attack or whatever is required of him.
One of my fondest memories, even since I've been sheriff, this has been a few years ago with one of our canine handlers and his dog, is he'd bring him in the office with him once in a while, and the dog had a great nose for food and would always come in and try to start sniffing around. And one time he came in and took an apple off of my desk to eat that, and it got disciplined. I thought it was funny, but the dog got in trouble. But I guess it could be worse. He's stealing my sandwich.
That was the sheriff's apple. It wasn't just a apple.
No, it was my apple.
I had a dog that was super good at taking tuna fish sandwiches away from my daughter. He could get the whole thing down and it'd be gone, and you just said, what happened to it? And he wouldn't say a word.
But again, we talked about the inconvenience of a canine handler because they are 100% all the time in training mode, obedience, making sure that they're compliant and doing the things that they need to do, whether they're in the car, out of the car, stopping for a bathroom break for the dog, and get continual training. And then there's training that they have to do that they actually have to document so they can stay within that, those requirements that even if they're not required liability-wise down, if something takes us to court, Are we going to be able to go back and produce the documents that say that, no, we've done this, and I can show you this along the way, and this dog has been proficient, and to say that's not in accordance in what this somebody is saying over here. Because, you know, unfortunately, we live in a land of people like to sue.
Sure they do.
So, and again, that training is important, so we don't get in there and do something that would, you know, be a violation to someone else's.
Some rights. Dogs have puppy cams on their vest.
We don't have those. I don't know about that. Again, Washington State's not very friendly to body cam public disclosure laws.
And, so if you have one, you can't show it.
Well, you could have it, but then again, it's going to be disclosable. And it's not the problem about the footage that you're releasing. It's about the intense work that goes along with that based on how Washington State public disclosure laws are. And for redaction and different things, you know, when you look at it, is there's so many frames per second or per minute on a video footage. And then when you release that, you have to go and touch that person that's actually handling that video to go to redaction, has to touch every single frame. So it's labor intensive is really what it is. And so we've petitioned legislation. And, of course, that becomes a lobbying nightmare as far as everyone that has an interest in that and when they're trying to protect. You know, private property, personal property, that type of thing, and what we could do. We believe body cams would be a great resource for local law enforcement in Washington State. But when we came out and looked at it, we talked with our Board of Commissioners and legal advisors, and they just said, you know what, until Washington State's willing to make some changes and make it better for the local agencies, we're better off liability-wise to stay away from that. It could really...
What changes would you like to see?
What would we like to see? Less, so it's not so restrictive and putting the burden on the local law enforcement. So there's like, it has to do with, you could be a juvenile stuff and addressing. Maybe I'm in a park in Lake Chelan or Walla Walla Point Park in the summertime and it says, well, every juvenile person there has to have redaction, even though they're in a public place. Based on maybe what the crime was or different things. There's just a lot of moving, working pieces, and it's really about the redaction side of it. It's not about what we offer up, what we're afraid, what we don't want to show. It's not like we'll be transparent and have that available. And again, I think body cameras across the board have proven to be a good tool. And again, it's not 100% type of thing because it's one perspective. It's only one angle, and sometimes they don't show the full story. But it definitely can be and help. And that's kind of what we went with when we went several years ago to put cameras in our cars. And we said, hey, this can be a great tool. If nothing else, it goes back just for our own traffic accident investigation. It can actually hold, not to say I'm going to hold you to the disciplinary standards, but to say it'll be able to exonerate our staff to say, no, this happened the way I said it happened. And we've seen those things almost multiple times, more so than not, come to actually aid and assist in exoneration of our staff than to say to hold them accountable disciplinary-wise.
And you can never tell when that's going to happen. I saw a terrible video from a dash cam of a patrol car where the guy was driving without a seatbelt, and it turned into a whole thing where the guy refused to get out of the car, refused to be handcuffed, he refused to be disciplined, he refused to accept the ticket. He refused everything, and it turned into a fight. And you'll never know. You say, well, that couldn't possibly happen over a seatbelt violation.
Well, even just...
But it did.
Yeah, even simple traffic citations that our deputies issue, if they have in-car camera to support that, they will actually, you know, mark that as evidence. And we've had some people come back very upset saying, you know what, I want to file a complaint. I don't believe I didn't do that. And they were adamant they did not do this violation. And the deputy would say, I have... Here's the camera. I mean, here's the video footage. Look at it. And it 100% supported what the deputy said that they did. And then that person would pull disclosure, and guess what? End of story. And I think sometimes they, in their mind, they truly believe that they didn't do that.
I think you're right.
I don't believe that they're just trying to lie and get out of it all the time. There are those people that do that, Michael.
Sure.
But not in every case. And so this is a great one. It gets handed out, and they're like, oh, well, I guess you're right. I did do that.
I always like the fact that someone says, I didn't say that, and I say, you just said that. That's exactly what you said. You said it, I didn't. Anyway, that's fascinating work.
That kind of goes back to distracted driving.
Oh,
a lot
God.
Of times, what's spinning in our mind at the time, how many different things are we thinking about or working on or doing or other things that are distractions that's filling our brain with thoughts, and we don't even realize that we did something or didn't do something.
It's true. Distracted driving is a ghastly thing. We can discuss that a little when we come back. Our special guest is the Sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett. Will we return after these words on the agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
News Radio 560 KPQ, it's 12:52. My very special guest is the Sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett. I wanted to mention that the Canine Wines Festival is this April 13th, that's Saturday, at Pybus Canine Wines. That's a way you can help support the canine system that the Sheriff's Department is using. Meet the dogs, meet the handlers. I guess have some wine, too, it looks like. Looks like the wine companies are getting the Chelan area vineyards are helping with sponsorship, and it's a good time. If you haven't really met these dogs, it's worth the trip down there because they're fascinating animals, and they're beautiful animals, but at the same time, they have two personalities, and you'll get to see both if you're lucky.
It is. It's a great public relations media event. It really, really is, Michael. It gets people a chance to see a more personal side of our staff and then what they do and just the rewards of their discipline and training that's paid off over a lot of hours.
Big investment, big training, and big results sometimes, and that's really worth the effort. So Canines and Wines is this Saturday, April 13th at Pybus. There is a donation fund that also is available on the sheriff's page there on the Chelan County page, where you raise money for special projects. Is that an ongoing effort?
Yeah, so we have donation fund that's available. Sometimes we have anonymous people that come in and say, hey, I want to donate specifically to search and rescue.
Yeah.
You know, I had a loved one that saved their lives, and we want to give back. We have people that are passionate about our canine program, and they want that money to go specifically to those programs. And again, then we have these events where we actually go out and actually, you know, do events to raise money specifically to that. And it's just, it helps us go above and beyond some of our public funds that we have. And again, because of our canine programs is so expensive and what it does, and we think it's a valuable program that we continue to raise money. And it's been, we've been phenomenal, both on our canine fundraisers, our canines and wines, and also from individual donors as well. They have almost 100% funded our program for the last, you know, 6 to 8 years.
Some people also come up with the special jackets that the dog wears that's Kevlar and protective.
Right, and different
those
equipment.
Are expensive.
Yeah. Oh, that stuff's not cheap.
Right.
But a lot of these funds actually specifically pay for us to purchase another dog and then take that handler and go and train them, buy some equipment, and then ongoing training, because it's an ongoing process along the way. And, you know, one thing I want to say about the people that help run these events, I mean, we've got people that get involved in this that are our current canine handlers, and then we have other individuals that used to be a canine handler.
Never get out of the
and
blood.
They're not currently, you know, with a dog, but yet they're totally committed to this program. And I just want to say they know who they are. I want to say thank you to those people that do this, and thank you to our you know, the citizens that, you know, maybe they're from Chelan County, maybe they're from out of the area. We like to think that this canine unit serves North Central Washington. It's not just Chelan County. When an agency calls, we're going to go and respond as quick as possible. Just a big shout out to our citizens to say thank you for all that you do to enhance and promote our canine program and any of our volunteer programs as well.
Brian Burnett, Sheriff of Chelan County. Thanks for being here, Sheriff. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thanks, Michael.
You're